Welcome back to Popcorn and Podcasting. Chaz is drinking, so he can't talk, so I better get my say in before he's done.
There you go.
Oh yeah, the answer to the trivia we need to do.
Yeah, if I remember right, the question was, what does the individual words in the phrase, how does it go?
Trying to split hemlock knots with a
pump. Corn dodger for a wedge and a pumpkin for a beetle. Yeah.
Yeah. So a hemlock knot is...
A hemlock is a kind of a tree, and a knot. It would be a knot in the tree.
And hemlock wood is supposed to be very, very, very tough. Very
so hard. A hemlock knot would be very... It's very difficult to
and
split.
And knots are the hardest part of wood, so... The hardest part of the hardest wood.
Mm-hmm.
And then a corn dodger is cornbread.
Yep, so very imagine the slice of cornbread for a... It's a wedge. Corn dodger for a wedge.
A wedge is a piece of metal, a triangle-shaped piece of metal, like the point of an axe.
Yeah, and then a pumpkin.
You don't know what a pumpkin is.
Yeah, a pumpkin is a pumpkin. and a beetle is like a hammer, a mallet for hitting the wedge. So that you'd be taking the wedge normally.
So you've got the hardest part of the hardest wood, and you're going to try and split it into two pieces. And so you put a slice of cornbread on there and start whacking it with a pumpkin.
Yep, to try to split that hemlock knot. Not going to happen.
Pretty much impossible.
And so he was kind of saying it's really, really, really hard to get things into the heads of the Latter-day Saints.
I suppose that's probably still the case.
I suppose so, yeah.
See, we're hard on ourselves. Anyway, so we're talking...
Or more like we're not hard enough on ourselves, one or the other.
Okay, so we're talking about engagement.
And marriage
today. We're going to start out with an article from the New Era in October 2004 by Adrienne B. Cope called The 8-Cow Ring.
And it's in October 2004, New Era. Can you read it?
Sure.
Or the first part?
Yeah.
When I was single, it seemed like engaged girls with sparkly diamond rings loved to show them off so everyone would know how much their husband paid for them. It's like in the film Johnny Lingo, where islanders are shocked when Johnny buys his wife with 8 cows instead of the typical 3 or 4. I couldn't wait until I got the chance to wave around an 8-cow ring of my own. But if you judge me by the plain, thin, silver-colored ring I currently wear, you'd think my husband was a cheapskate. Actually, my husband worked for months so I could have a beautiful ring. Unfortunately, it was an uninsured beautiful 8-cow ring, and I flushed it down the toilet.
We'd only been married for 2 weeks. And I'd already formed the habit of carefully pulling off my ring and placing it safely in a little box above the sink each time I washed my hands. I didn't want to run the risk of tainting my ring's sparkle with soap scum buildup. I could never do that. I'd lose my ring for sure.
This is why you just leave it on all the time.
It stays on my finger, no matter what I'm doing.
No matter what you're doing.
Okay, where was I? Oh, as I pulled it off one Saturday morning, the pressure built and it popped right off my knuckle. I watched in disbelief as my lovely ring sailed straight for the toilet and hit the open bowl dead center, just as it finished flushing. Uh-huh. I screamed, I cried, I tried to jump in after it. But grown women just don't fit in toilet bowls, no matter how desperate the circumstances.
Unless you're a witch or a wizard on Harry Potter.
That's true.
They use that as a...
They're not quite grown, they're still teenagers though, but I guess adults still were getting in that way.
my turn?
I think I'm in the middle of a paragraph. Okay, I forgot where I was. Oh yeah, grown women just don't fit down the toilet, no matter how desperate the circumstances. My poor husband took the toilet apart for me, stuck his whole arm down the sludge hole, ew, and felt around for the ring. We called every person in town that had anything to do with the sewer system and pleaded our case. Lady Earline is connected to the largest high-pressure pipe in the city. Your ring is long gone, I was told. In one swift swirl of water, my ring was gone forever.
Over the next few days, I became understandably depressed. My marriage preparation classes hadn't covered crisis of the flushing variety. I worried I'd ruined my chance for a happy marital relationship. After all, my husband had insisted on buying me a nice ring because the sacrifice it would take him to be able to buy it would represent his love for me. Now I'd flushed the symbol of his love down the toilet. I was telling my husband for the 42nd time how oafish I was and how sorry I was that he'd worked so hard for something I'd clumsily lost. He took me by the shoulders, looked into my eyes, and said, "Please stop, Ariane. I don't care about the ring. I didn't do all that work for some sparkly rock. I did it for you, and I'd do it all over again 100 times if you wanted me to. You're worth more than all the diamonds in the world. I love you."
My husband's comforting words and warm embrace that day still made me realize how silly I'd been acting. The ring was gone, but everything it symbolized still exists. So even though I still punish the toilet with a hard kick from time to time, I have learned to focus on what's most important, and that's not how much my husband spent on me, but how much he loves me. My husband insists he'll get me a new ring someday, but I'm not sure I want one. Every time I look at my thin little ring, I remember what real love is. It doesn't sparkle, it can't be shown off, and thank goodness it can't be flushed down the toilet.
Okay. Here's a little quote by Jeffrey R. Holland. "Husbands, you have been entrusted with the most sacred gift God can give you, a wife, a daughter of God, a mother of your children who has voluntarily given herself to you for love and joyful companionship. Think of the kind things you say when you were courting. Think of the blessings you have given with hands placed lovingly on her head. Think of yourself and of her as the God and goddess you both inherently are." That was Jeffrey R. Holland, May 2007.
Oops. Well, it's because the... Okay. And this is a quote from Marvin J. Ashton from The Ensign of May 1991. "After a night of intense pain and suffering, one morning a husband stricken with a terminal illness said to his wife with great feeling, 'I'm so thankful today.' 'For what?' she asked. Knowing well his difficult and trying situation, he replied, 'For God giving me the privilege of one more day with you.'"
Aww. I do like that quote a lot.
And how are we for time? Oh, we're doing great.
Here's a talk by President Gordon B. Hinckley. Given it's a BYU speech. And, when was it given? 1978. I was not born yet. About a year before I'd be born. Okay. He says, "I greatly appreciated that music. I have never heard a rendering of I Need Thee Every Hour quite like that, nor one that has touched me more deeply. I did not know that it was Indian Week at BYU, or I might have spoken of those wonderful people. As it is, I shall speak to you and to you also, wonderful people." "As it is, I shall speak to them and also to you also, wonderful people."
Well, so he's speaking to Indians and you guys too.
Okay.
I guess. Anyway. I was just thinking, I gather they probably don't call it Indian Week at BYU anymore. Even if they still have a week like that.
Native American Week?
I guess.
I don't know.
It's funny how things change. Imagine how much has changed of what's politically correct in Chris Hinckley's, or what did change during his lifetime.
Yeah.
Things like that, that you just, you know.
There are things that the way they said it 20 years ago would be terribly offensive today.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Anyway. It is so refreshing to stand before you. You give life, vitality, and beauty to the present, and assurance to the future. I always come here with a feeling of inadequacy. But today, I feel a little more confident. At the close of a recent state conference, a teenage girl handed me a sealed envelope, which I opened on the plane on the way home. It contained a letter that read in part,
"Dear Brother Hinckley, I just wanted to thank you for coming to our stake for this conference. That was really a neat message. I wanted to know if you know Paul Dunn. He's my favorite speaker, and he's the one that dedicated our building. I haven't heard from him for a while, but you are every bit as good a speaker as he is. Now, having established my credentials and having sought the direction of the Holy Spirit, I wish to talk about something in which all of you are interested, something for which all of you long, which you need, and without which the world can indeed be a lonely and dreary place. I do so because this is Valentine's Day.
On this day, when I was a little boy, we traded paper hearts at school. We did too.
Mm-hmm.
We traded paper hearts at school. And at night, we dropped them on the doors of our friends, stamping on the porch, and then running in the dark to hide.
We didn't do that. Well, we used to.
Well, we'd knock on the door, not stomp on the porch.
Yeah, we did that too a little bit, I remember. We'd, get zippy bags full of treats for certain neighbors, especially ones that had kids our age, and go doorbell ditch them.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah. Sometimes, we would tie a fishing line to a valentine, and when the would-be receiver would go to pick it up, we would pull the string. That happens in life with some of us. Almost without exception, these valentines had printed on their face the words, "I love you." I have come to know that love is more than a paper heart. It is the very essence of life. It is the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, but it is not at the end of the rainbow. It is at the beginning, and from it springs the beauty that arches across the sky on a stormy day. It is the security for which children weep, the meat and drink of youth, the adhesive that binds marriage, and the lubricant that prevents devastating friction in the home. It is the peace of old age, the sunlight of hope shining through death. How impoverished are those who lack it, and how rich are those who have it.
Cool. For most of you here today, it is one of the reasons for your presence on campus. You are here because of the love of your parents, whose interest in your present and future happiness, whose interest is in your present and future happiness. You say you are here to gain an education, and I hope that is true. But in your hearts, you know that you are also here to find a companion, that someone with whom you hope you can fall in love, later marry, and live happily with forever after. This is not an idle, idyllic dream. It happens. I know it happens. I have experienced it. And you know that it happens, and you hope and pray it will happen to you. I am one who believes that love, like faith, is a gift of God. I agree with Pearl Buck, who said love cannot be forced, love cannot be coaxed and teased. It comes out of heaven, unasked and unsought.
Some of you have taken classes to prepare you better for that hoped-for time. They may help qualify you, and each of us all needs the help, all the help we can get. But I am inclined to agree with Sidney Harris, the columnist who wrote, "One of the grand errors we tend to make when we are young is supposing that a person is a bundle of qualities, and we add up the individual's good and bad qualities like a bookkeeper working on debits and credits. In the balance is favorable, Oh, if the balance is favorable, we may decide to take the jump into marriage. The world is full of unhappy men and women who married their mates because it seemed to be a good investment. Love, however, is not an investment. It is an adventure. And when the marriage turns out to be as dull and comfortable as a sound investment, the disgruntled party soon turns elsewhere for adventure. Ignorant people are always saying, "I wonder what he sees in her," not realizing that what he sees in her, and what no one else can see in her, is the secret essence of love. Entering a marriage calmly and rationally is like dancing a bacchanal.
I'm betting it's referring to Bacchus.
Bacchanal? Huh. Dancing a bacchanal calmly and rationally. It is a contradiction in terms. Wait, so what is? Oh, entering a marriage calmly and rationally is a contradiction on terms. It takes into account everything except what is important, the spirit. And that's the end of the little quote of President Hinckley quoting the newspaper.
I had a friend who decided that his would be a scientific marriage, one built on the qualities of his wife rather than his feelings for her. He lived in California in a large ward in a large stake where there were many attractive girls his own age. In the pursuit of his quest, he made a chart. At the top of each column, he set down some worthwhile qualities such as beauty, education, ambition, a wealthy father, and so forth. And then down the side of his chart, he wrote down the names of all the girls he knew, and then he graded and rated them in numerical order, 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on. He proceeded to make his conquest. Expectantly, he called number 1. She refused to go out with him. Number 2 also had an excuse. Number 3 gambled on a date. The last date. And he ended up marrying number 4. A year later, someone sent me a copy of the local paper in which my friend gave notice that he would no longer be responsible for debts incurred by his wife. Divorce followed shortly after that. 40 years have passed, and my once burned and loveless friend has never remarried.
I think of 2 other friends of about the same vintage, a boy and a girl. I knew them in the years of high school and university. He was a boy from a country town, plain in appearance without money or apparent promise. He had grown up on a farm, and if he had any quality that was attractive, it was the capacity to work. He carried bologna sandwiches in a brown paper bag for his lunch and swept the school floors to pay his tuition. But with all of his rustic appearance, he had a smile and a personality that seemed to sing of goodness. She was a city girl who had come out of a comfortable home, but she would never have qualified for a beauty contest. Her face was freckled, but she made the most of what she had in the quiet but attractive manner of her dressing and in the way she fixed her hair.
Something of magic took place between them. They fell in love. No one could understand why. There were far more promising boys for her and far more beautiful girls who might have interested him. But these two laughed and danced and studied together through those years. They married when people wondered how they could ever earn enough to stay alive. He struggled through his professional school and came out near the top of his class. She scrimped and saved and worked and prayed. She encouraged and sustained, and when things were really tough, she said quietly, "Somehow we'll make it." Buoyed by her faith in him, he kept going through those difficult years. Their children came, and together they loved them and nourished them and gave them the security that came of their own example of love for and loyalty to one another. Now 45 years and more have passed. Their children are grown and are a credit to them, to the church, and to their communities in which they live.
Recently, while riding a plane from New York, I walked down the aisle in the semi-darkness of the cabin and saw a woman, white-haired, her head on her husband's shoulder as she dozed, and his hand clasped warmly about hers. He was awake and recognized me. She awakened when we began to talk. They two were returning from New York, where he had delivered a paper before one of the great learned societies of the nation. He said little about it, but she proudly spoke of the honors accorded to him. 45 years ago, people without understanding had asked what he saw in her and what she saw in him.
I thought of that as I returned to my seat on the plane, and I said to myself, their friends of those days saw only a farm boy from the country and a smiling girl with freckles on her nose. But these two saw in each other love, loyalty, peace, faith, and the future. Call it chemistry, if you will. Maybe there was a little of that, but there was much more. There was rather a flowering of something divine, planted there by that Father who was our God. In their school days, they had lived worthy of that flowering. They had lived with virtue and faith, with appreciation and respect for self and one another. In the years of their difficult professional and economic struggles, they had found their greatest earthly strength in their companionship. Now in age, they were finding their peace, their quiet satisfaction together. And beyond that, they were assured of an eternity of joyful association under covenants long since made and promises long since given in the house of the Lord. Reflecting on the picture I had just seen,
Reflecting on the picture I had just seen of these two happy people, there came into mind these lines, read long ago from Robert Louis Stevenson. Trusty, dusty, vivid, true, with eyes of gold and bramble dew. Steel true and blade straight, the great artificer made my mate. Honor, anger, valor, fire, a love that that life could never tire. Death quench or evil stir, the mighty master gave to her. Teacher, tender comrade, wife, a fellow fairer, true through life. Heart whole and soul free, the august father gave to me. That was really hard to read. I don't know why.
Sorry, maybe I should have read it.
No, it's just kind of tongue twistery.
Mm-hmm. See, I could wish nothing better for each of you, my dear young friends, than love, the companionship of one dearer than any friend, someone to be deliriously excited over and to be happy with, someone to stir within you the very best that is there, someone to grow more appreciative of, more tender toward, more grateful for, more a part of as one year becomes another and life moves toward eternity. May the Lord answer your prayers with love, the kind that will always express itself in concern, not for self, but for your beloved companion. Mm-hmm. There's more to this talk, but that's the end of this subject.
Yeah.
So we'll stop there.
Actually, we should read this little portion. It's one last quote. This is Boyd K. Packer. And if you suppose that that the full-blown rapture of young romantic love is the sum of the possibilities which spring from the fountains of life, you have not yet lived to see the devotion and comfort of long-married love. Married couples are tried by temptation, misunderstandings, separations, financial problems, family crises, illness. And all the while, love grows stronger. The mature love enjoys a bliss not even imagined by newlyweds.
Participation in the mating process offers an experience like nothing else in life.
all human experience. It will, when covenants are made and kept, last eternally. For therein are the keys of the holy priesthood ordained, that you may receive honor and glory. That's Doctrine and Covenants 124:34. Which glory shall be a fullness of a and a continuation of the seeds forever and ever. That's DNC 132:19. But romantic love is incomplete. It is a prelude. Love is nourished by the coming of children who spring from that fountain of life entrusted to couples in marriage.
And make it harder to go on dates.
Yes. Which is kind of ironic, because before you're married, you know, you're trying hard to avoid that aspect of that intimate part of marriage.
And then once you have kids.
Once you have kids, it's hard because you have kids. Yeah, I was just thinking too, this is a good time for this to be coming up too, about intimacy, because, you know, we've just been talking about engagement and early married life and so forth. And I think one thing that was a comfort to me was the point at which I realized together, kind of, is that, you know, for example, the honeymoon, you know, it's our honeymoon. Nobody's going to know except us what went on that honeymoon.
Unless we decide to tell, which we never will.
Which we don't, you know. And so, you know, you don't have to feel pressured by society's idea of things, of how exactly it's supposed to take place. That's totally between the two of you. And something you should discuss before you're married. Not in
much
great detail, but in enough so that there's no surprises, you know. That, you know, so that when you go on your honeymoon, you don't know what your plan is, you know. You can decide that ahead of time. So.
But, yeah, discuss it and decide what you're comfortable with together.
Especially for Latter-day Saints, where we know that intimacy before marriage, physical intimacy, is not appropriate.
Yeah, so you know that if you're getting married in the temple, then neither of you have experienced that. So why should either of you be expected to be pros the first time?
Yeah. So just take it easy. Have a great time together. Have a sense of humor. That helps a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, and there's one more quote here we're going to read before we go, I think. It's just a short little one. This is...
Okay. Had Abraham loved Isaac more than God, would he have consented? As the Lord indicates in the Doctrine and Covenants, both Abraham and Isaac now sit as gods. They were willing to offer or to be offered up as God required. They had a deeper love and respect for each other because both were willing to put God first.
That was Ezra Taft Benson, an ensign, May 1988. So, that's a good thing to keep perspective is keep God first in your life. And if you're both doing that, you can't have anything but success.
Mm-hmm.
You can't fail if you're both putting God first. Okay, we have just enough time for a trivia question.
Wait,
so we'll pause while we go get one.
Yeah. Okay, so our trivia for this podcast, our trivia question is from the Book of Mormon. How did the sons of Achish win the majority of the people over to their side?
And there's your question for the day.
So what's the story behind that?
I don't know. That would be another thing to look up.
Yeah. If you know that, or if you look it up, let us know.
Bonus points if you know find out the story behind it. Actually, you probably will have to, because you'll have to study
find
up
it.
To find the answer.
Good luck.
Yeah. And I think that's it for today.
Yep, we're out.
And we're out of time. We got 10 seconds.
10,
so
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Thanks for listening.